This week on the Africa Innovation and Technology Podcast, we are talking about the surge of e-commerce in Africa. Hello, I am Paul Ndiho. Every week we strive to bring you in-depth discussions that inspire, empower, engage, and motivate young emerging African entrepreneurs using new technology into action. The increasing access to the internet sees a rapid emergence of e-commerce businesses across Africa, eager to tap into the continent's growing middle class, who have the money to spend and whose shopping habits have changed due to the coronavirus pandemic. For more insight, I'm joined by two outstanding entrepreneurs making their mark on the African continent, Ron Kawamara, CEO of Jumia Uganda, and Paul Orajaika, CEO Aldon Toys, based in Lagos, Nigeria. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Let me start with you, Paul. How are you and how is business? What do you do in Lagos, Nigeria?
I'm the CEO of Aldon Toys. Aldon Toys is known for trading on African themed toys, beauty dolls that promote African culture, and also highlight those inherent values and features of the African child. And aside from these ethnic themed toys, we also do general toys, play toys, educational toys, and we're basically known for servicing the big retail stores in wholesale basis across Nigeria and West Africa. We also have our South African distribution chain network from where we service the rest of the world with our products. So in Lagos, we'll be doing very well, and then in the time of the COVID, a lot of things has changed, where a lot of movement has actually been restricted. So people actually have to do most of their shopping online. And that's what we're currently trending now, most business going online. And that's what I've done this as of today.
Ron, you run Jumia Uganda. How has business been like for you in the last year also?
Well, the last year has been a challenging one for everyone in the economy. What we saw is that we had a total shutdown of the economy, and it had strong ripple effects. But we saw that companies that did not have an online exposure were affected the most. And on the other hand, we saw the creativity and ingenuity of Ugandans, who quickly pivoted to using innovation and technology to get the goods and the services that they need to be able to stay home and stay safe. So we saw a lot of new customers who had never used Jumia, who had never used online companies, begin to transact online. We saw thousands more of our partners or vendors who also embraced technology to continue to sell at a time where they could not sell in an offline space. So overall, I think that we saw a burst of innovation, young entrepreneurs who started small delivery companies, logistics providers, to make sure that they can continue to serve the public who was staying home and staying safe. And so I'd say that there was a silver lining in the tragedy that entrepreneurs used innovation to provide solutions at a time that many Ugandans and many Africans needed this.
Both of you run a very successful businesses, but in a very, very competitive market. Maybe talk to us about how you've been able to run your businesses and what lessons you've learned this far.
Well, I think for my context, we've learned that we need to adapt with the times. Before COVID-19, perhaps we are not very well set for all the essentials. And now we realize that by people staying home, they needed groceries, they needed fresh food, fresh produce. And so as Jumia, we quickly adapted to make sure that we have everything that a customer needs. Today, as a result, we are a much more complete business, that we have all the consumer needs available. We were the only providers of logistics upcountry. These are areas that don't have good connectivity to good retail. And with the lockdown that was in place, customers had no way of getting good retail in those tier two and tier three upcountry areas. But because of our expanse logistics network, our warehouses, our pickup stations, we're able to serve a segment of people who otherwise were not catered for. So we learned how to be resilient. We learned how to adapt. We learned how to cater for the people at a time where they had no options. And I think that Jumia, as a result, is a much, the business is closer to the people, and the people love Jumia much more.
How about you, Paul?
Yes, well, in the Nigerian context, I would probably say one of the key things that has actually played out for us is being very proactive and being futuristic about your business growth. Before now, everybody was so comfortable doing offline market, where everybody coming to the busy Idumota market, like you know how busy it could get here. But Aldon has always known that the future was online. And then we started off our online business, not even knowing that COVID was going to hit and hit so strong. So at the time COVID hit, even though our online presence has not been scaled as it is today, at least we had a takeoff point where other retailers, other wholesalers were beginning to play catch up, trying to set up their websites, trying to set up their e-commerce platform. But because Aldon has always had this idea that you need to play into the future, prepare yourself into the future, we just wanted to go online, transit into what people were doing, looking at how online was gaining presence in the West. It just made sense to try to adopt those things here. So we were very lucky that before the COVID hit, we already had the platform, the base to transact our business online. And the moment the government put all restrictions, shut down the economy, kids were home for our business, the parents had to keep the kids busy. And what did they do? At that point in time, everybody just knew they needed the very fast means to get toys to keep the kids home and busy. So that actually drew a lot of traffic into our site. And because of the level of traffic, we knew that to cope with this level of transaction, we needed to up the game. And just when the COVID was hitting hard, we immediately started deploying bigger and better technology to service and cater for all that we're facing at that point in time, looking at the traffic. So we're quite lucky because we started the online business not knowing that the time will play out in our favor.
When you look at the tech giants here, especially those that are in the e-commerce business, you look at Amazon, the likes of Alibaba, these are companies that grew like 1,000% in the last year or so. I wonder what it's been like for your companies back in Africa.
Well, I think we need to add context to that question. If you are to look at the US, North America, or Europe, e-commerce or online transactions make up close to 30% of all transactions. And in Africa, we are still about 1% or less of all transactions happening online. And part of this is many barriers, whether it's access to internet, it's the infrastructure to be able to move products and services in a seamless way, it's lack of the banking service, that online payments are still limited. But what we saw is that as part of that as well, there was a trust barrier, that customers did not trust online businesses. And for the first time, we saw that e-commerce was a safe option, that customers were safer by buying online and staying home, that customers who could pay online avoided holding cash and potentially receiving or spreading the virus. And so for the first time, e-commerce or online business was not just a convenience, it was a necessity, it was the safe choice. That allowed us to grow quite fast. It really led us to get to a point whereby we can say we're reaching that point of no return.
Before we go to Paul, I have some good news for you. I read a report done by McKinsey Go Digital that says that by 2025, online sales in Africa will contribute to about 10% of sales across the board. So maybe that's some good news for you guys. if people embrace this
Yes,
kind
sir.
of online businesses and stuff like that.
And
Yes,
indeed, the online companies are slated to create 5 million jobs in the next 5 years. So indeed, those numbers are looking at a real trend and something that we see in our markets.
yes, absolutely. Well, like Ron rightly said, that one of the biggest challenges with e-commerce and online trading in Africa is question of trust deficit. So it's hard for people to believe that you could actually transact and get what you bought and delivered to you, or even you're not being shortchanged by putting in your card details or your bank details in the course of making your purchase. But you see, so we have to carefully make customers understand that for our brand and our personality, our character, that trust was key. So it was also very difficult convincing them to have that faith, that probably the bad experiences they've had in other online trade was not same with what is applicable in Aldon Toys. So that was actually one of the big hindrance, and then that's why you see most customers, even up to date, they rather have the option of pay on delivery, whereby they want to see what they've bought before they pay, or they feel their cards are not safe when they log it into your platform. So that actually, in a way, slows down the faith that people have on e-commerce. But with time, we continue to give them this good quality service, and by the time we continue to build the trust, the word of mouth continues to go out that this company, you could actually rely on this company, despite any bad experience you would have had. Once you get into our platform, our online platform, OrdonToys.com, we make sure that your experience is the one that you want to share with others. So I think as we gradually build that faith, build that trust within the e-commerce space, that's only when we will have these numbers that McKinsey has projected. But when people continue to stay back, continue to share bad experiences, it will only make people just hold back.
Let me go back to the issue of trust. A lot of people, even here in the Western world, are skeptical when sometimes you're buying stuff online. You don't know whether you're buying the right thing. For example, I've bought some stuff and they ship them home and it's not what I ordered. But you raise a very good point. I've used, for example, the services of Jumia Uganda to buy stuff and make it, have it delivered to my parents' home, and they succeeded at doing that. So on my part, I felt like, wow, this is a remarkable thing for them to operate in a capital city in Kampala, and they're able to deliver something in a remote place of Uganda.
Yeah,
Yes,
that's
indeed.
important. Yeah, just to take it like what you said, you see, like in the Western world, you see, yes, we know that they also have this issue of trust, but you know, it's easier for you to make a return on what you've actually ordered that you don't like and you don't have stress. But here, you know, it's issue. Once the mindset is to shortchange you, they come up with all kind of excuse that you can't even return these items, or they tell you all kind that you've probably not opened the box in the right way, you have to bring it the way it is. So one of the things is, like in the Western world, you see more like a warranty kind of approach, where I don't like this thing, even when I've used it for some days, I can bring it back. So but in here in Nigeria or in Africa, you know, the mindset was to deliver what you didn't buy just to make a quick buck, and then by the time the customer raises concern, it becomes an issue. So I think it has to do with the level of comfort that people have in the Western world, where it's not what I bought, or I don't like this item, I'm free to take it back.
For people to buy stuff on your platform, they have to have that trust. What level of trust is given by your company for them not to worry about losing stuff or buying stuff and they don't get what they deserve?
Yes, indeed. We have invested a lot of resources in building trust in our customers. And part of what we've done is allowing our customers to be able to pay on delivery. The customers are able to order and pay once they receive and verified their product. We allow them to return it back to us within 7 to 14 days for a full refund. The majority of our products on the platform have a warranty, and there's a clear return process that's stipulated. And we do these things, and they're painful because cash on delivery is expensive. Not many logistics companies are able to handle bulk cash and be able to remit. It's risky to move around with cash across our cities and upcountry, but we do it because we want to build trust in our customer base that you can be comfortable transacting on Jumia. What we're dealing with in the lack of trust is a pure legacy issue that many of our consumers in our markets have been mistreated by people in downtown, by traders who don't have standards, by traders who don't have a return process, by traders who don't have standards on quality, who don't have warranty. So we are victims of circumstance and a history that we're not responsible for. But as e-commerce players, we've made it our responsibility to make sure that customers, when they buy on our platforms, are very well protected. They can be confident in both the quality of the products and the brands we sell. And also they know that after sales service will be of very high quality. And consequently, we see many of our customers are very happy with our service.
Earlier, we talked about some of the challenges that you guys run into running these businesses. For example, you talked about the lack of connectivity in some of the places. You talked about the lack of trust. People thinking that, no return policy when it comes to Nigeria. But Jumia Uganda has adapted that return policy, which is good customer service in a way. Is there a way, for example, in Nigeria, you can maybe learn from what like Jumia is doing in Uganda to build that confidence in the people?
Absolutely. You see, for every business to thrive, you also have to put some component of cost into that to build that trust. Where customers return these items, we also have to take care of the return cost of bringing it back. But we do this because we understand that it's most important to have the customer happy, even though it's going to cost us some money. So we know that there's a cost element, but that does not define the fact that we want to keep our customer and keep that loyalty going. So aside from doing all this and all these cost implications, we're fine with it because we want the customer to continue to give a good recommendation of our services to family and friends. But on other notable concerns is probably the issue of poor infrastructure. You know, when you have to send your goods to maybe very far northern part of the country, and then you know you want to work with a deadline and you tell customer, you're going to receive these goods in another day or two, but then you find the drivers having to deal and contend with bad road networks, you know, bad experiences, you know, with maybe like the police, the customs, and all these things are not within our control. So sometimes the customers get very angry and very upset that, wow, you didn't deliver to your timeline, but how I wish this were within our control. I mean, better infrastructure, better road network, this would actually help mitigate some of the delays and contended issue we have.
So the issue of logistics is a very, very big challenge for you.
Absolutely.
Ron, that's your forte right there.
One thing about doing business in Africa is that you have to be willing to solve all the challenges, from logistics to payment solutions to internet connectivity to lack of trust. To run a successful business or to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to be willing to solve all those issues from supply chain all the way to the last mile. And that's what we've done as Jumia. Indeed, we're investing a lot of resources in building a distribution network that includes warehouses, pickup stations, vendor drop-offs. We invested a lot in a payment solution called Jumia Pay that allows customers to be able to pay us in many multiple mediums, whether it's card, bank card, whether it's mobile money, whether it's other schemes. But one of the more challenging indeed has been the logistics, as Paul is mentioning, and we have had to invest quite a lot. And now we have a standalone logistics service that because of our investment in the technology, because of our investment in the infrastructure, we're able to allow out third parties, whether it's a distributor or a vendor, a shop owner, another company, to be able to tap into and take advantage of our delivery network. And And so what was a challenge indeed has become an opportunity because of the investment we've put in.
What does it take for somebody to have their products sold on Jumia? Take for example, Paul runs a very successful toys company in Lagos. But what would it take for a person like him to maybe partner with you at some point and do business in Uganda?
Well, we partner with tens of thousands of vendors, manufacturers, and distributors across the continent. And we welcome all those vendors who have great products of high quality that we can ascertain the product quality and assurance. And once that's done and we work out the commercials, we list them. Jumia is a platform that allows Africans to sell to other Africans. So we do not discriminate. We work with the biggest brands to the smallest brands, the big from the largest manufacturer and distributors, the small shops, people who are making small fashion items, people who are making artifacts, to very talented companies like Paul's that does toy distribution and toy manufacturing. So it's an open platform. It's a democratic process. And as long as the product quality is great and customers like it, we support all businesses. I think, I don't know, I think Paul has his own distribution network. I would encourage him to also partner with us across all our markets.
I guess you're taking some notes, Paul.
Absolutely. That'd be nice.
Paul, to you, how much of your business is on selling online?
When we started online business, we didn't know COVID was going to hit. So we're just doing the online business just to give customers access to shopping from their home and looking at where the world was trending to, looking at the numbers we see in the West and in the US, we felt it was a good platform to start with. But like I speak to you today, the online business is going to contend with our mainstream business because the volume and access to customer reach we have now is so huge. You know, in our social media networks, you know, we have a huge number of followers who are actually streaming in and buying toys from our online presence. So I think the COVID was like an opportunity that came and blew a sector that was not meant to be a main factor in our business. But today, you know, if you go to our online presence now, we've employed and hired more hands. You know, we brought in more high-skilled staff, more tech guys. We've actually employed more people into the online platform than we do in the offline. You know the way our business is structured. We have the wholesale department in the fourth floor where we deal. But now when you go to the online, you see it's bustling with activity because the number of staff strength has increased because of the level of traffic that has been coming in. And that is also where we always say in our meeting that this, our online, is the future. You know, this online is going to be greater than all our biggest distributors. It's going to be bigger than all our biggest partners because we are talking about reaching about 1 million people, you know, with direct sales. So it's something that we feel that it's worth the investment we're putting into it because it's growing leaps and bounds.
Ron, earlier you talked about how you want Jumia Uganda to be a business platform where every single person can go and get whatever they want. You talked about from the big things to the small things to even groceries, selling groceries online. I wonder, how has that transition been? What did you have to do to get to that point?
Well, we have always had the infrastructure in place. We've always had a very good and seamless vendor onboarding process. We have made it easier for vendors to be able to sell on the platform in a self-service way. Our commercials are very attractive. We have built a good existing logistics network across the country, serving every part of Uganda. We had a good reputation and goodwill in the country. So adding on more segments like fresh produce, adding on the informal market vendors, these are people who typically are young people, they are women, they are people with disabilities, and typically have been left out of the digital economy. And during this time, it was very important that we created a sales channel for them. And I think the impact has been very positive. The vendors we listed on, the market vendors, the fresh produce vendors, are doing extremely well in the revenue streams they're getting. They are formalized now. They're able to have proof of revenue. They can go to banks and get loans and expand their businesses. And our customers now can get everything they need on Jumia, whether it's food, restaurant food, whether it's fresh food, fresh produce, fruits, vegetables, whether it's groceries, whether it's cleaning items, whether it's electronics, fashion, or home items. Everything is there. We have built a comprehensive assortment of things that Ugandans and Africans need, and this is the same thing we've done across all our markets, whether it's in Ivory Coast, in Tunisia, Algeria, Senegal, Nigeria, and Kenya, across the board. And I think that this is the future. It's not the future, but it's the present, because we see that Africans have embraced this. We see that people are buying in big numbers and they're coming back. And for me, it's exciting. It's exciting that we can do this for our vendors. It's exciting that our customers can get this many options at the best pricing in the market.
I was about to ask you the future of e-commerce from your vantage point.
You know, from our vantage point as Jumia, we see that the vendors are ready, the market is ready, they're embracing technology. But in some of our markets, of course, there's additional barriers that have been created. The young entrepreneurs, the talented developers who are trying to provide the solutions to the challenges that we have in Uganda and across Africa, they're being blocked. So these are regressive actions that are not helping the industry at a time whereby the largest companies across the globe that are creating value and changing lives are being done through technology. We see that some African countries are moving backwards by limiting internet, by blocking the app stores, by making it very difficult to innovate and compete and create value over the 21st century. So yes, we're making progress as a company, we're making progress as the vendors, our partners, and even customers are progressing. We need to make sure that our governments stay in touch with that reality and support rather than hinder the growth of online trade in Uganda and in Africa.
How about you, Paula, from where you are in Nigeria?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree that the future is actually online because looking at the level of mobile phone penetration in Nigeria, it's huge. And the level of smartphone penetration for everybody, you know, you go to the rural area, the old men, everybody's on smartphone. So with the more the penetration of mobile line users in Nigeria, the more the smartphone within the environment, the more people will always want to transact online. So I think it's very encouraging that Ali, when you talk about the technology savvy of the Nigerian populace is beginning to say and translate to online as a business, because everybody could just log into the app, Ordon app or whatever store, Jumia, be it anywhere, and just make your purchase at a very seamless and easy way. So I think with all this, it's actually helping drive online as the future of transaction in Nigeria.
How about you, Ron? From where you are, what can you do to overcome some of these challenges that you talked about?
We want to be able to innovate forward, not innovate backwards because of government barriers. My hope is that government becomes an enabler of progress and not a block of progress. My hope is that we see the big picture where the future is going and we look at e-commerce and online innovation as the next industrial revolution. And my hope is that we are seen as partners of progress and that we're allowed to be on the table and to share our experiences and be able to help the government understand how they can support us better.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
Thank
it.
you.
Well, on that note, do you think you have a better idea? Or you have created something that everyone is talking about and you would like to be featured on this show? Please, please, please send us your video clips and tell us which country you're from and how your innovation is impacting your community. Be sure to like, subscribe, and watch this program every week on our Facebook page, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. That's our show, and thanks for watching. I hope to see you next week. For now, so long from Washington.